If we could find here's the next. So the first thing we're going to do before we get back on off water typing is we're going to take general public comment for the afternoon on other issues. Since it's 1:30 and that's when we had it scheduled. Elaine O'Neill, please. You were already up here once.
Can't get enough of a good thing. This was done on the fly, so I don't have printouts for you. For the record, Chairman Banath, members of the Forest Practice Board, I'm Dr. Elaine O'Neill, Executive Director of the Washington Farm Forestry Association. And I wanted to provide a little bit of context concerning the scale and scope of the small forest landowner impacts to fish, water, and habitat from the harvest in Western Washington. I have to say, I appreciated the comments from the board members this morning on our template. I agree with Board Member Davies that we would be well served to have some data on small forest landowner distribution, size class, intent to harvest, harvest metrics, to really help board members understand the potential impacts of our riparian template proposal. For context, for several years, our organization has been advocating in the legislature for funding to update the small forest landowner database, or now the landowner database, that was originally developed in 2007 by Luke Rogers at the University of Washington. That was originally Rural Technology Initiative. It's now the Natural Resource Spatial Informatics Group in the Precision Forestry Co-op. I think it's important to keep in mind that that database was originally developed as a requirement of the forest and fish legislation. They wanted to know how many small forest landowners they were, where are they, et cetera, et cetera. That's where you get that 214,000 small forest landowner number. It is definitely dated. It needs to be updated. I'd say so far, WFFA has mostly been a lonely voice in the wilderness on that. Support from any of the agency folks, either getting it in your budget or allowing us to push for that in the legislature, that would be a plus. Having the environmental community on board with us in the ask would be an even bigger plus. You know, when we ask for FREP, sometimes we're the lonely voice. I was really delighted to hear that Peter was willing to help us advocate for FREP as well. Pulling it from the adaptive management budget is also an alternative should funds become available. That seems unlikely. But Luke Rogers from UW did present that to TFW policy, I'm going to say about a year ago, I don't really know, to garner support for that funding. So definitely the caucuses are aware of that potential. In their interim, I think there's lots of opportunities to provide some base data on scope and scale. We have lots and lots of data on small forest landowners. It's drawn from the state sources, it's drawn from national sources, including FAA. We've got surveys of small forest landowners, we have Resource Planning Act data, we have harvest data. We'd really be happy to work with DNR and others to synthesize this for a February meeting in support of the request by Board Member Swadeen. I think it's important to get the information out of you prior to any decision in May. I also think it's appropriate to emphasize that small forest landowners with less than 20 acres, you know, your cabin in the woods person, already operate under a different set of rules than what the template is addressing. They have, having forest, so if you're less than 20 acres, you can run under a 20 acre exempt. Having it greater than 20 acres doesn't mean that there's an intent to harvest, but it likely increases the odds, especially when the landowner passes away, ages out, and the land is distributed to heirs, as noted earlier by board members. And finally, I want to make the point about development. While I agree that land use change is not in your purview, I would like to emphasize that forced practices do not operate in a vacuum. Our members collectively think in a broader context, and it's critically important to keep that pressure, to keep these pressures from conversion in mind when you're looking at how you support landowners. In my perfect world, it would be a wonderful outcome if we could develop a regulatory environment that would support Ken Miller's dream of having it be cool to be a tree farmer. And if you think that that's just crazy, think about how the local movement has changed the conversation around small agricultural holdings. There's no reason we couldn't have the same thing in small forest landowners. We just need the social license that's now enjoyed by small family farms, including a fair and equitable regulatory framework that supports those four forest and fish goals: harvestable fish, water quality, ESA, and economic viability. If that were so, the heirs might be more willing to come back to the land and do that work. So those are my comments. Any questions?
Ken Miller.
Thanks, Max.
Good afternoon, Chairman Bernath, members of the board. I had something else I was going to talk about. Save that for the next meeting, because I was just extremely delighted to hear the comments from Board Member Davis, echoed by Board Member Laurie and Bernath about really the landscape part of it. All of our efforts have been focused around the site-specific. The closest we've ever got to landscape level is some very general conversations around cumulative impacts. And again, to compliment the Forest Practice Board, the last November board, they asked us to go back through some of the old template efforts and see what we could find. And one thing we found was a couple of pages on cumulative impacts and the statistics that Elaine just talked about. So I'll just hit just the high spots of those and give you an over picture. 91.47%, now this is in 2007, we have no reason to believe it's changed dramatically, but 91% of small forest landowners that own more than 5 acres have 1,250 feet or less of stream reach. More important, 18% of the fish stream reaches in Washington State are owned by small landowners. And not all 18% of those manage for timber. So that's the cap of the risk on average for stream reaches in fish stream reaches in Washington. So if you took a general number of, okay, the average small landowner harvests once every 50 years, you divide 18% by 50 years and you get 1/3 of 1% per year on average of the Washington's fish stream reaches would be touched. And that's a temporary potential impact. You can go to worst case scenario. The WIRA that has the most small animal ownership on fish streams is number two San Juan WIRA, where 57% of the fish streams are owned by small forest landowners. So if you do that same math, take 50 years rotation into 57, you got 1.14% potential risk. So another, and you just go on and on and on with those potential hypotheticals. The point being, it's very, very small potential risk from our viewpoint, de minimis. And you couple that with We don't manage our timberland in conjunction with our neighbors. So it's not like we're going to work in this watershed. You know, we're just all over the map. So there is a lot of data out there, and I'll correct, well, I'm not really correct, Elaine, but WFFA actually got the money from the federal, from the feds to fund that data. Steve Stinson and Sherry Fox and some others went back and I think got $1 million seed money for that. And it's just really great. So there is a lot of data out there. One other thing that kind of touches into as far as a potential way to monitor is the 20-acre exempt was mentioned. There is a monitoring program in place for those where we go by actual streams, and every time there's a harvest using the 20-acre exempt prescription, it goes into the database. It never, even though it never goes away, so it's just cumulative for a long period of time. And the percentages, I think there might be one WIRA that's up to 1% after 18 years or however many years it is. So obviously if we opened a similar prescription to everybody that owns bigger than 20 acres, you know, the numbers will come up a little bit. So there's lots of data around landscape level. Everybody has this vision. Everybody's going to go out there and do this harvest all at the same time. And that's just not the real world. So thank you very much for the question. I really appreciate it. That helps us get into a conversation we've never really been able to get into before. So.
Thank you, Ted. Darren Kramer.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Darren Kramer, Washington Forest Protection Association. A couple of quick comments on some of the other agenda items, even though they're not action items. You touched on this earlier during the water typing discussion, and may do so again in the next agenda item. I assume this has come up in the conversations I've missed over the last couple of years, but I think it's going to be really important for you folks to think carefully about how you're going to select the best alternative. What's the criteria by which you're going to determine performance and the best fit? That's not an easy question to answer, so that's going to take some pretty heavy-duty thinking and lots of information. The 2019 protocol agenda item, I don't have the board motion in front of me, but from what I looked at a week or so ago, it indicated that stakeholders would be involved in that process, so we're anticipating that that is yet to come. At least hopefully it will. And then finally, the adaptive management improvement agenda item. It's unfortunate, I think, that we had to postpone that. I hope we don't lose the work that has gone on up to this point. And I would invite everyone to not preclude themselves from doing things outside of any kind of formal process that was planned or may be planned in the future. There's lots of work we can do together, maybe even outside of these forums, that can go a long ways towards improving the whole system. So I'd ask everybody to keep that in mind and join me in doing that. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. Karen Twilger.
Wait a minute. You guys tag teaming?
No, I actually missed comments this morning. I apologize for that. For the record, my name is Karen Twilliger, soon to be former forester with the Washington Forest Protection Association. I just wanted to take a couple of minutes, if that's all right, if you'll indulge me, to thank you all for all of your service. Thank you for all the kind words that you said this morning. I didn't get to listen to them. I'll have to listen on TVW. And seems that I have a boss that is determined to get every last minute out of the plane for work. So I have thoroughly enjoyed working with all of you, and I really appreciate that. I've also thoroughly enjoyed working with all of my TFW colleagues. We don't always get along, but I think that we've worked well together. I also wanted to just let you know that I really appreciate your dedication, just from a government perspective. Public boards are some of the most unsung heroes in our governance system. They're really that link between the citizens and the government, and they're really important to continue. And I just want you all to know that I've always appreciated the fact that you've all been so willing to serve in this capacity. This is very important work that we're doing here. And over the years, I've had lots and lots of experience with natural resources, policy, and science. And I really, truly believe in the TFW and FFR goals. of maintaining clean water, harvestable salmon, protecting healthy aquatic life, and also having a viable forest economy. I think that this process that we're engaged in really allows forests and forestry to remain an integral economic and environmental part of the fabric of our state. And I think that's something to be really proud for. We should all be proud of the work that we do, and whether you're in the environmental caucus or industrial landowner caucus or small forest landowner or tribe, I think it's really important to be proud of what we're doing here today. And that goes for the scientists and the foresters, the biologists, the policy people, and even the attorneys. We all share a real common love for our forests and our woods. When I was a little girl growing up in Wyoming, which you know is a little bit drier than here, my father would tell me about these beautiful, wonderful Pacific Northwest forests. And I really didn't quite believe him, because in Wyoming we have one green month, and that is June. But of course he was right. And the forests are amazing. And as an adult, I actually became aware of why that is. And I have been so impressed with the amazing people that work in the woods and work for the woods and have the connection to the land. So a few years back, Cindy Mitchell, who's the communication director for WFPA, did a survey of foresters from all different walks of life. So government, industrial landowners, small forest landowners, tribes. And she asked them to just give her their best understanding of why they're a forester. And there's one quote in particular that just has always struck me and illustrated the passion and the joy and the real optimism that foresters have for the work that they do. And that quote is this: "As a forester, if I were told that the world is going to end tomorrow, I would plant a tree today." It just really encompasses the incredible work that we do for now and for future generations. So, again, thank you all for being absolutely wonderful, for having patience with me, and for doing the work that you do.
Ash Robart.
Hello, Chairman Bernath, and thank you for giving me this opportunity, and members of the board for providing comments. I wanted to comment on the discussion you had right before lunch about the BHB study plan. Over lunch, we had some conversations around it, and we wanted to provide some input to this.
Hey, Ash.
Yeah.
Why don't you wait a minute? Let me get through. So I've got requests from somebody who missed public comment during the PHB discussion. And I mean, is that all you're going to talk about?
Yeah, just the PHBs.
Debbie, are you in that same boat?
I am, yes.
Okay. So let's close off public comment on general public comment.
Okay.
And then, do this a little cowboy style. So since you're already up here, well, we're going to open public comment, finish up the public comment from before lunch on PHBs.
Okay, thank you. So for the record, my name is Ash Borbach. I'm the Forest Practices Coordinator for the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission. So I'll just read something I've written quickly here. We support giving CEMER an opportunity to provide comments on the PHB study plan, but we don't think implementation of the project should depend on consensus approval from CEMER. We think the Forest Practices Board should have an opportunity to see those comments from CEMER and act on them as appropriate. And further, we support having CEMER implement the project if it is approved, assuming it's approved, and provide oversight to it. We think it is critical the study be implemented using normal CEMER process based on guidance provided by CEMER's protocols and standards manual.
Thank you, Ash. Debbie Kay.
Thank you.
board members. My name is Debbie Kay with the Suquamish Tribe. I am also the West Side Tribe's voting senior member. As we move forward, I also support moving this into the adaptive management system. The thing I want to make sure we consider as we move forward is that in the site selection, priority is made for ensuring that there are low gradient watersheds included in the site selection, hopefully above the anadromous floor. This is a different mechanism for end of fish at these low gradients than in the foothills, where it's mostly velocity and steepness that's causing the end of fish. If we don't have enough information, to understand that with the data that we collect, then you will be placed in a position to be making statewide recommendations with incomplete data. So it is my hope that as we move forward, that the board considers that and makes some sort of comment on whether this is a priority for you as well. Thank you.
Can I ask her a question?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
So can you just clarify for me the space you're talking about in terms of low gradient but above the anadromous zone? Because my understanding of the definition of the anadromous zone is that it encompasses most of the low gradient stuff, and once you get above it, and I might have an incomplete understanding. So can you talk a little bit more about how it's possible to have low gradient but above the anadromous zone?
Sure. In our low gradient geologies, you have a couple things that will end the floor. You have first place where you have a sustained area of 10%, but you also have a lot of incised stream channels where you have, so you've got plains, but then you've got basically a 20-foot gorge, and the stream is at the bottom of that gorge, but everything at the top of it is flat. So you have a very clear anadromous blockage, but you might have a 5% plain that's above those grounds, and they still are going to act geologically and physically different than a foothill wall.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. Mark Goodyear.
Thank you, Chairman Bernath and members of the board. I also just wanted to follow up on those last two comments. My name is Mark Gauthier with the Upper Columbia United Tribes Forest Practices Coordinator. And I know the decision before you is basically whether or not to accept the study design, and then how to proceed with the study as it relates to going back into the CEMA process. And so I also just want, and I also just for your information, I'm the co-chair of ISAG, who would be one of the CEMA bodies that would be working on this when it comes back to CEMA. So what I just want to suggest is that the board does actually accept the study design, and I think that the science panel really helped articulate one of the biggest obstacles is the site selection piece. And for us to get started this next field season with over 200 sites and 35 in each region, it's gonna basically be a Herculean effort to get those sites selected and to get this study underway. And so my hope is that we could accept the study design, allow for us to start to do the next steps, which is to hire that DNR staffer to do the site selection coordination. If we were to postpone, for example, if somehow this got back in the CEMA for multiple months and we were to postpone that hiring, that could set us back on a whole field season. So just looking for a way to understand the desires of people to have CEMA's role be integral moving forward, but also looking for a way to not necessarily have the study be held up at this point and to allow it to move forward. So I think you heard a similar recommendation. You know, we batted around different concepts, but one would be for CEMA to put kind of a time certain deadline on CEMA to provide additional comments that were in the form of like a comment matrix. You know, it's debatable what form of a majority, minority, whatever it would look like to get that feedback back to you guys in a timely manner, but then to allow, again, for the study to move forward while still allowing time for that CEMA feedback without the potential of getting into a do loop that would set us back. So. You know, like was mentioned, CEMA will be working on the implementation strategy and hopefully a number of the issues that are these last kind of dangling issues to clarify can be clarified through that implementation step of the strategy. So just again, recommending to accept the study design and to move the ball forward, but find an opportunity in the motion language to bring CMR's input back into the conversation.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Okay. Assuming I can close public comment on PHPs. Which leads us to I guess what I'm going to do is entertain motions to move to accept the study and send it to CMR for implementation. And I understand one of our board members may have a motion.
I do, but you still have it, so I can't read it.
You want to put it up on the screen?
Do you want me to read this first and then have discussion?
Go ahead.
Okay.
So we can get into discussion.
The motion is the Forest Practice Board accepts the draft study design and directs CMR to, number one, review and confer with the study design authors and the AMPA to accomplish any necessary clarifications, and approve as satisfactory to successfully implement the study, and two, complete this work as expeditiously as possible.
Okay, we have a second from the board.
I'll second.
Thank you, Board Member Smith. Discussion. Board Member Davis.
Can I add one comment to this?
Sure.
The rationale here is, and I think there's broad agreement from the public and from what I've heard in the snippets up here about having the CMR involvement. My personal concern is that, and we'll get to that later in the agenda, we have a science panel that is not in consensus, and we have a minority report that I want to talk about some more. But we all talk about buy-in for this process, and we're looking at $3.5 million that we're going to spend. I personally think we're going to end up pretty close to where we started after $3.5 million. But be that as it may, I'm concerned that we don't even have consensus with the science review panel. I would really like to get it back so that CMR can have a little more input in this. If we're going to get the type of buy-in, I think we should have.
Okay.
It's all yours, Jeff.
So, I get the sense that people are feeling a lot of urgency for this validation study to get, or titling evaluation of the physical attribute study rolling sooner than later. I guess I said this before lunch, I'm a little worried about the, I feel like a little bit is, hey, accept the study design, which I think is, I think it's a pretty solid design from my own review of it. And it's $3.5 million, and what we heard is, hey, there may be some savings through time, through efficiencies, so I appreciate that. And what's not lost on me is the budget is what the budget is, and maybe some projects are coming in, you know, not spending the money in a timely fashion, and so you might be able to juggle some of the money around. But I appreciate what Hans said earlier about, hey, this is a big ticket item, and if we're going to advance this, then we should be having a conversation about what the impacts of that are when we do advance it. And I don't know if that's right now. I know that would help me feel a little better about, have a little more sense of clarity moving forward. The urgency piece for me, and I don't know, maybe I'm just way off on this. We're in a process where we're going to do rulemaking. And this study really is going to come back to us in 4 or 5 years with some measure of what the accuracy of the characteristics around the PHVs might be. So when I combine the budget considerations, and I'm looking to my teammate from ecology, and the fact that if I'm his director, I'm struggling to continue to extend Clean Water Act assurances potentially, and what ramifications a $3.5 million project would have on the projects that are already underway or need to be completed in order to make progress on the further progress on the Clean Water Act assurances. I'm really struggling, and thinking in that struggle, you know, one potential method would be that this doesn't start, this validation study doesn't start in March. Just thinking out loud, but for me, it's really, it's hard. It's going to be hard for me to say, yeah, advances. You know, is the design going to be modified between now and then? And what's the cost? And what's the ramifications of accepting that cost now? Do we turn to Hans and say, hey, we'd like the whole budget to come back to us to do what I heard Hans ask us to do is, hey, folks, why don't you prioritize these things and help out on that front. So I'm really feeling like I'm swimming in muddy, shark-infested water.
Other discussion from board members? Board Member Lori.
Thanks a lot for putting me on the spot. Got my director watching me now. No, but you're perfectly right. We have a number of other really important studies out there that are crucial to the Clean Water Act assurances, which are about to expire. So I also would appreciate a little larger discussion on the budget. It all gets down to, I think, the urgency of initiating the study right away. And I agree that I'm not so certain that it really has to happen today, or maybe, you know, next meeting or whenever this comes, might come back to us. It seems like having a review of the budget is a prudent thing to do. And so I have some questions about the motion to make sure I understand it. Sentence one there, who would be approving the study? It says to accomplish necessary clarifications and approve as satisfactory to successfully implement. So is that CMER approving it?
Yes.
So this motion would have this go to CMER, this discussion happen, CMER then formally has to approve the study.
Before implementation.
So do we know how long that would take? It doesn't come back to us?
I think the process is we accept it with these contingencies, and then it goes back to the AMPA and the CMER to get the clarification worked out and proceed forward. I mean, I guess the question I have regarding both Jeff and your comment is, are you talking about postponing the validation study? And if so, are you also going to postpone the rulemaking and the manual writing processes? I mean, I thought we were going to get the science before we did the rulemaking process.
That's never been on the tables that I'm aware of. Board Member Nelson, the rulemaking was going to happen, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I thought that your original proposal to put a validation study on the table was out of fear to some extent that this process would end up pushing the fish no fish line way upstream. And I think the data that was provided to us today, the spatial analysis, actually shows that's not the case. depending on, you know, everybody's tolerance around how far and so forth. But so that, in my mind, that raises the question about, you know, usually a validation study, you adopt a rule and then you see whether you hit the right target or not, which is really what this study would do. And so then, you know, Jeff and Tom is asking, can we have a discussion about priorities, and if we miss the first field season, is that really a big deal or not? Assuming we go forward with a rule proposal in May.
Well, I don't know what the rule proposal is yet, so it's hard for me to react to that. And I don't think it should be based on whether it's going to be a real significant change or not. I mean, that to me is not part of it. It's what the science directs us to do. So I guess I'm a little bit confused by what you're talking about is postponing the validation study because of the cost and the priority, but to continue with the rulemaking, is that what you're saying?
For clarity, my understanding, interpretation, whatever you want to call it, is we're in the rulemaking process. This I think appropriately changed the title of what it is to the evaluation of the physical features, which is not validation. So that's an appropriate change in my opinion, because validation would be taking the rule and testing it to see if it's a, you know, relative effectiveness based on the objectives of the rulemaking. What I am saying is, given that we're on the pathway for rule consideration and potentially adoption, the urgency behind this study, that's my question, right? I heard testimony in the public comment period about how this would be a Herculean effort if it started in March, right? And now the motion that's up for discussion consideration is saying that it's appropriate to go to CMER, right? And so now I'm seeing windows crunch down to get the buy-in and have a process. And at the same time, if we say yes today, then it does have potential budget ramifications in this fiscal year, and how do we manage that for this fiscal year? And then rightfully so, I think Hans is saying, hey, if you guys are going to take this on, then please help me as the AMPA to say what your priorities are. So, because some stuff that's on the list that we've already approved is going to have to drop off.
Before I call on you, Hans, would you come up to the mic? So Hans, as far as I know, the increased cost of this first until June 30th, we may or may not be able to absorb that, but it's the out years, the next biennium,
right?
That's this correct. May impact priorities.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if there's something kind of in between this, where we direct that CMER language. We don't yet approve the draft study plan. We direct CMER to to finish looking at it, provide the appropriate input, and then in the meantime, or at the February meeting, we have a discussion about what the budget ramifications are next biennium in terms of prioritization. And then maybe those two things can come together and we could, you know, if we're satisfied that we can figure out how to make everything work and there's a pathway to get everything done that we need to, including clean water assurance studies and yada yada, then we give the green light in February, but we're not then waiting for the CMER process that's up there. So we get that going first. We have a budget discussion in February. We do final approval of, like, yeah, go ahead, we're okay with you spending this money. And then maybe the stakeholder concerns through CMER are settled at that point, and then we feel like we're being responsible in terms of not giving such conflicting direction from a budget perspective that we mess other things up in the in our whole program that we're supposed to be getting done.
So, Tara, you want to join us up here? Since you're... So there's, what you raised is two questions, and I want to make sure that, so if we made a decision on moving forward in February, is that too late to actually get it on the ground this field season? That's number one. And then number two, if we have a budget discussion in February, is policy going to be ready to, I mean, we won't have a budget from the legislature yet, but we know what we asked for. So, can we, I mean, usually we do that in May after the legislature has taken action.
Are you asking, for example, to give you two budget scenarios in February, one with this and one with this delayed? If there's some specificity around your request, I can answer your question. But as it stands now, our process is no.
Well, I heard Board Member Nelson earlier in the discussion saying that he was a little nervous making this decision without understanding the budget ramifications. And then, Hans, you clarified for us, I think, in response to the question I asked, that yes, there would be budget ramifications, this sort of bio wave and out years, and that without us giving priorities, you couldn't tell us exactly what those ramifications were. So I think the discussion we want to have is what potentially falls off the plate if we don't increase, so we approve this $3.5 million, maybe we can cover it through June 30, but next biennium we've got some issues, we have some choices to make. What are those choices? What, I mean, it's like scenario planning, right? Like, if we get an increased budget ask that covers this, then we're cool. If we don't, what falls off the plate? So I think that's the question. And then you said that if we don't approve moving ahead with this right now, but we approve it in February, we can't get going for this field season. And so that indicates to me that if we said yes today, that a bunch of stuff would start happening, which also says to me that you're assuming that the CEMER discussion would not take very long, that you would get approval through CEMER pretty quickly and could do a bunch of stuff between now and February to get the study going. Is that right?
You're correct. Since August, I've been meeting with the ISAG group every month. We've been talking about this study. We've been talking about the implementation, different options. We had a call yesterday morning. It was also very productive. The discussions have been very productive in terms of getting clarifications. We even had a comment brought up that had broad support from everybody about the clarity provided in the study design. So you're right. I don't see that as a major hurdle because people have been involved and aware of this since the beginning. They've made comments. And they've really focused on the places where the clarity is, you know, needed. So I don't think it's a big lift. With respect to the budget, if the concern is the bow wave, there are steps that we could take this year without moving into full implementation. We could phase it in. We could do the site selection piece. I mean, that's a big step. That's going to be, and it's expensive. So there's a number of things that we could do to make progress on the study in the next 6 months that are not as time sensitive as having permits in hand, sites ready to go, 4 crews out there electrofishing on, you know, March 1st. That's not gonna, that's gonna be a Herculean effort as what was described. If we took this in a phase and then we're prepared to do the full study, starting with the low flow season and the high flow season and delay, you know, essentially putting it off for 6 months, that'll have a budget implication, but we could come up with what that would look like. I don't see that that's a, it would be a delay, no doubt it would be a delay, but I don't know that that would be a fatal kind of delay. We could still make progress. We wouldn't just wait, sit around and wait. So that could be an intermediate step that could happen. In terms of the budget coming back here, there are a number of items on the master project schedule that are expensive that are not Clean Water Act assurances. So if you want to weigh priorities, just leave the Clean Water Act assurances as they are scheduled and moving forward, and discuss the non-Clean Water Act assurances, you could also come up with more than the money that is being asked for this study. So I think you should, we shouldn't just preclude that they're all Clean Water Act studies that would fall off. I don't think that is, in fact, where we likely want to start.
Can I ask if other board members have a comment on this motion? Board Member Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also concerned about the CMR approved language, and I think that was brought up by one of the last few comments we had, and Board Member Nelson also pointed out that we already have a majority-minority situation. So if you put it into the normal CMR approval process, then that potentially is going to rise up as a dispute at CMR, which can end up in a dispute resolution process, which is months down, who knows how far. And so the concern was dumping it into that, although we did, when I had a discussion with some of the tribal folks at lunch, we thought it was important to have the CMR folks look at the study design, because you know, there may be something that the panel missed or didn't consider, but maybe provide the opportunity for the CMR folks to provide written comments that would point out any kind of flaws or anything that was missed. But we accept the study design, allow them time to make written comments, and assuming there's nothing fatal, then it moves on to the implementation phase at CMR and not through the CMR approval process. It's our preference.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and perhaps I wasn't very clear on this.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that at all. My intent is that we broaden it out to include CMR in this, because my concern remains we've got a fairly small group of scientists that wrote a report. We don't have consensus on the report. So if there's any way we could broaden that out, CMR seems like a logical place to do it. Whether it's, I don't think we need the formal process either, that it's going to take time and becomes a, you know what it becomes. I think if we had input from them to the AMPA going forward with this validation study, with their comments to bolster the number of scientists who have looked at this, to give us better credibility, give us better buy-in. That was my intent.
So I'm just going to make one comment on this issue about non-consensus. We don't have any non-consensus on the study plan that I'm aware of. We have non-consensus on the report was put out last year and around the use of tributaries, which is a totally different subject from PHB selection. So I want to make sure we're not confusing the two. Okay. So anybody else want to comment before I try and summarize people's thoughts? Board Member Sir.
My concerns, maybe it's because I'm new, but I have concerns about the budget, and I don't know, because I haven't been here for very long, what our priorities are in terms of what we have in the work plan and what the impacts that this, if we approve this going forward, what that might have to those. I feel like I need more information about what impacts will be made by approving this before, especially to our future work plan, before I
Okay. Board Member Janicki.
Just a question. I support getting this back in front of CMR since they've got to do the implementation and monitoring, but I guess given the time schedule that we're under, is there a way to pass this motion and additionally give budget authorization to do the, it's the hiring of the staff and the pulling of the statistical samples that will, I assume, is the time consuming crunch, and if we wait until our February board meeting, we've blown the season. So can some, Hans, you earlier said that we've got budget capacity until end of this biennium to continue with this project. So on kind of that slower pace, but getting that critical path piece done between now and the February board meeting, can we authorize that to move forward and still call go, no go in February if there's something that CMR kicks back that's just so, anyway, just a question. We can slow it down as long as they can spend money on the backside.
Anybody else before I try and summarize where we're at on this motion? Are you going to add more?
I don't know. Board Member Davis. Helpful or not, but it's a slightly different version than what Lisa just said. There's the February conversation in my head and kind of the prioritization around the budget piece. And then I heard Hans talk about the potential to phase the project. So it's just a slightly different version of, we approved today, I think we've already approved 500 some odd thousand, right? For this.
Almost eight, I think. Actually.
For this fiscal year. So that's kind of already approved. Really now, what the action identified on the agenda outside of this motion, admittedly, is to approve the study design and move it forward, right? So I don't know what we need to do from now other than deal with the motion at hand and then figure out what the strategy is moving forward. It's probably, I'm guessing, going to take another motion to give clarity on the direction.
That's what I'm trying to summarize is where we're at. And if we can agree sort of where we want to go, then we'll take a break for a few minutes, maybe either come up with an amendment to Board Member Nelson's motion or come up with a separate motion to replace it so that it reflects everybody's thoughts.
So, Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Did I understand that the budget is already there for this year, 2018?
Correct.
So if I were to add in after study design with the budget request for 2019, so that we wouldn't be locking in the entire process, would that help?
Not quite.
Okay.
Let me suggest some things. So I think what I'm hearing is everybody wants the board to go ahead and accept the study design. And everybody wants CMR to comment on the study design. Those are the first two things. I think there's a question, there is clearly a question about how this is going to impact next biennium's CMR budget. And we could certainly have that discussion in February if you guys wave your heads up and down, that's good. But I also hear there's a desire, whether it's a phased implementation, meaning we'll only do staff, recruit staff and do site selection this year, or start that now so that if we get a go in February, I don't know what else has to happen so people can be on the ground in March. Or is it just cleaner to say we're going to do a phased one?
there are a lot of steps, a lot of steps. There are contracts, there's a bidding process, there's designing the specs, putting together an implementation plan for CEMER, because assuming it's being implemented by CEMER, forget this part for a minute, there's a CEMER step in there as well. So there's a lot of moving parts. And so when I say that this phase approach, that really, we do need an answer on the phase, because if let's say for the sake of argument, we just move forward this year with the money we have approved for this budget and did the study, then we'd be at the end of the year and we wouldn't have money for the next year of the study, and that probably isn't a good idea. So we could scale back, but if we scale back, that is the answer today, that we're going to scale back and take root with CEMER and go through some of those other steps. Keep in mind that the CEMER, or the stakeholder review process, not officially the CEMER body, but there are comments, and there are every one of those comments has been registered and documented. And so I'm not flying blind when I say that we've had conversations that were constructive and productive. I feel confident that that isn't a huge step to get to the next phase. I really don't think it is. If we were starting from scratch, I think it would be, but where we are today, we're in a good place for that. The trick is really that bow wave and what it means to the next biennium's budget. And we've known that was coming without this study. Before we talked about this study, we knew that that was going to be a challenge. And so adding this other study on top of it definitely means that there are some other things that won't be able to get done. There's no question about that. And we can come back with the scenario, we can talk about different priorities, but ultimately this body, the board, they're your priorities that we need to bring to you. And we can provide the budget, we can give you all of the background information that you need, that you want. We're happy to do that, but it ultimately, the prioritization process is for your decision.
Okay, so accept the design, ask CEMER to comment on it. I would say do the phased approach to assure success. I mean, assuming we say yes in February after we have the priorities discussion, seems like it's going to be tight. And so this just enables us, or takes the pressure off of CEMER to produce magic by March 1, right? And then we'll have the priorities discussion in February. So if the board members are think those are the pieces that we need to address in the motion, then I would suggest we take a break, work with the motion, and see if we can rewrite it to reflect those thoughts. Is that all right? Okay, so let's.
Sounds good.
10 minutes?